For some reason, I picture you. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, hello and welcome, everyone. As I'm welcoming everyone, Scott's chiming in, so I want to hear what he has to say. But let me just get my my intro started since we're recording. Welcome, everyone. You are on the ABCs and 123s of life insurance. And that actually, just how we started, is kind of the theme of this, what can be kind of a dry subject. But Scott and I have a lot of fun together, and so we promise you won't fall asleep. So that's like, and we sometimes we jump in, we interrupt each other, we have a lot of laughs. And he sometimes makes fun of me, and I make fun of him. So that's the theme of this teleclass. But I want to welcome everyone. All joking aside, this is a really, really important teleclass. It's one that I think as parents, we kind of tend to put off having these important conversations. But Scott, we've been working together for a few years now. We've done a few of these classes together, and he really makes this topic something that I think everybody can understand and digest, and he's very personable, and he's a really super nice guy. I know him not just professionally but personally as well, and he's just a nice guy. And before we jump into the nitty-gritty of all this, I want to give you a little background on Laffey Financial Group. Again, we've known them for years. They are an independent estate planning insurance firm dedicated to providing innovative and customized programs for individuals, families, and businesses. And their boutique firm allows them to maintain a true one-on-one relationship with their clients and gives them the ability to provide personalized solutions to accommodate all types of client needs. They're honest, knowledgeable, and efficient in all aspects of protecting you, your family, your business, and your interests. And, they really, really do practice what they preach. Scott, he was just saying he came to one of our Mother's Day luncheons, and he just likes connecting and helping parents. He's a parent himself. I'll let you talk a little bit more about it. But welcome, Scott.
Thanks for having me, Heather. And hello, everyone. Yes, my name's Scott Cohen. I'm with the Laffey Financial Group. We are part of a Mass Mutual agency, and I always want to thank them for help co-sponsoring these types of sessions. So thank you, Mass Mutual. But we are an independent group, which means we are out there working with all carriers and all companies with no bias, which gives you a true planning perspective with no influence one way or the other. We're honest, and I think in the insurance world, it's pretty refreshing, even though I probably sound like a soft drink commercial, but I know from what I've seen out there in the industry, it's a very complex market, it's very confusing, and we do our best to keep it plain, simple, vanilla, and straightforward for people. So thanks for having me. I know there's some questions that we'll try and tackle for you, so don't be bashful. If I can't answer your question on the phone, or if it's a little more complex for your own personal situation, we can always talk, or you can shoot me an email offline, and happy to help no matter what.
And by the way, Scott isn't just saying that. He really means it. We have had many Mommy Bites community members contact Scott in follow-up emails with specific questions. So, and in fact, one of his clients who he met through one of our Mommy Bites classes, I saw her at the Mother's Day party, and she was all excited to actually be connecting with Scott out of office. So these connections really do happen in authentic places like this. So do reach out to him. Okay, so let's get down to the nitty gritty, Scott. And again, listeners, please feel free to type in questions throughout, as many as you want, anonymous, or leave your name, totally up to you. So what's the most important thing new parents, or maybe not so new parents, should think about?
Sure. So I think there's probably expecting moms on the call, and moms, like you said earlier, maybe going on 3+, babies. But I think one of the most important things that is very overlooked with newer parents is getting a will in place. Now, I'm not an attorney. I don't profit from telling you to go and get a will. And a lot of people think, well, we don't have millions of dollars, so what on earth do I need a will for right now? I'll get one down the road. But realistically, if you are a parent and you have one child or 15, you really want to you really want to mark down who the guardian is going to be of your children. God forbid something should happen to you or your partner. And people forget about that, because if you do not dictate who is going to take care of your children, then the courts are going to decide for you. So I think that's something that's critical, that you should get down on a legal piece of paper and sit with a trust and estate attorney to make sure that that's taken care of.
Absolutely. Listen, I know my husband and I went through this and we put this off. So I know that it's not the most fun way to spend an afternoon, obviously, but it's so important. What Scott's saying is so true. I made the assumption that if I didn't have it in writing, it would just go to my husband's sister or like an immediate family member. I just assumed that's kind of how it would go. So I wasn't super stressed about getting it done. And then I heard, and it is true, that so the court does decide. So, you know, really take the time to do that. It's incredibly important. And if people have kind of follow-up questions on that and specifically how to get that started, we'll send Scott's information your way.
So Heather, I know you love when I quiz you. Are you ready for this quiz?
I hate when you quiz me. That's a lie. People, that's a lie. He knows I hate this. Go ahead, get your quiz out of the way.
So it's an important one, because the will actually dictates the who gets what, right? It's the last say, so to say. So I'm going to quiz you real quickly.
Okay.
I think you get it right every time, but no pressure. So if you had, let's just say, you're working and through your employer, you have a 401k and you listed, as you should, a beneficiary. And back when you started working at that company, you listed your sister. And then you get married, you have children, and you stop working or whatever it may be, but you guys go and you do a will. And in your will, everything that you have goes to your husband and then eventually to your children. And God forbid, knock on wood, you pass away, you and your husband. Who gets your 401k? Your sister or your children?
I think in that scenario, my sister.
I wish I had a little bell to ring. You're correct. So it's, you know, I know most people think of a will as, you know, this, and I just said, who gets what? But the will is the last place that they check. So if you have IRAs, 401ks, other investment accounts, checking savings accounts with beneficiaries that you can put on there, or even your insurance contracts, anything with a contract with a beneficiary is going to be who it gets passed on to. If it's not, if you don't have those things listed, then the will dictate the final say as to where things go. But it's a common misunderstanding that, you know, very important as you get married, as you have children, as life events come about, you switch jobs, that you keep updating all your contracts, all your beneficiary designations.
And
good job, Heather.
Oh, I mean, every time it's like, it's unbelievable. I mean, I can teach it, right? Scott, how do people go about actually finding the right attorney? Like, if people are kind of digesting this and they're thinking, okay, this is on my list to do over the next month or so, like, what's their first step to finding an attorney that does it?
So I know there's some online sites that are available very inexpensively to do these things. I'm not a huge fan of them, though, because I just feel there's always an extra element towards meeting with somebody in person and them getting to know you and getting to know your personality and your family and what your goals and objectives are for your family or your wealth. Everyone's in different states probably on this call, but there's trust in the state firms that are in the big cities that have high overhead and can charge you big sums of money for some complex planning, and you may need that. Or you may need a sole practitioner, a trust and estate attorney, you know, in your local town that can do just about the same type of documents but a much less expensive fee. So we do have a ton of relationships with trust and estate attorneys in the tri-state area for those that are in this area. If you do need a recommendation towards an attorney, regardless of the size of your estate, or if you just need a plain, simple will, we can probably suggest some names for you.
And Scott, just switching gears a little bit, let's talk about life insurance. Sure. I mean that's super overwhelming to parents as well. How do they get started?
Great question. And I know this is, I want to thank everyone for joining the call, because I know life insurance is like a doom and gloom topic. It's the last thing you want to be talking about during lunch. But it is, it's so important. And, you know, I talk about it every day, so I become a little bit immune to the conversation and how difficult it can be. But it is, if you're a parent and you have someone now depending upon you, or a partner that's dependent upon you, so critical to get something in place. And you can't always just rely on some, you know, one-time salary that you get from your employer's plan. So the first thing you do is exactly what you're doing. You reach out for education. You get on a call like this and you learn. And the next step is to sit with your partner and get in front of a guy like me. So insurance agents, hopefully an honest one, because there are some either crooks out there who are only about them and their commissions, or they lack the knowledge to really shop the marketplace and know the technical ins and outs of these products, because it is a very complex marketplace. But you need to just sit down and let someone listen to you and learn about your needs, your goals, your wants, your family, and put in the right plan that makes sense for you. Some of the things that people should be thinking about when it comes to life insurance are the first questions that we get are, how much coverage do I need, right? Because $1 million term policy is sounds like a ton of money, but in today's day and age, that can go really quickly. If you think about trying to replace your spouse's income, God forbid something happens to your spouse tomorrow, how do we replace their income so that you can sustain the same standard of living that you have today? So if your spouse is earning $100,000, $250,000, $500,000, now you see how much income you really need to replace that, and that's where life insurance comes into play. Not to mention you may want to pay off a mortgage, pay off college debt, pay for future college for those kids of yours. To take that burden off your shoulders. So there's a ton of different products out there, but you really need to be educated into what product makes the right sense for each scenario. So learning about products, term insurance versus permanent insurance. And, you know, I'm happy to educate if you want me to go deeper into the differences of these types of products and learn about the underwriting process, because you can't just tell the carrier, you know what, I want $1 million and where do I sign and where do I pay? You have to be medically and financially underwritten in order to get an offer from these carriers. And that's really where guys like myself come into play to navigate the market of knowing which carriers are the best for you. Because if you have a heart condition or a family history of heart condition, one carrier may view that more favorably than another. So just because carrier B is the least expensive in New York for a $1 million term policy, they may not like, as you go through underwriting, that you have a heart condition, and they may end up being a lot more expensive than if we would have applied to company A. So there's a ton of ins and outs, but my job is to make it as simple and have you understand how the process works, and without any surprises or gimmicks or anything shady like that, like we've seen out there in the marketplace.
And Scott, just to make it a little less scary for people, do most of the medical exams happen? I mean, for us, they came to our apartment at a convenient time. Is that how most of the insurance they sent someone from
exactly
from the office? Okay.
So regardless of the carriers that we apply to, whether you apply to three different carriers or just one insurance company, there's a third party examining service that my office will hire and schedule on your behalf, which we always suggest you do first thing in the morning. Before you eat, drink coffee. Now, if you're breastfeeding and you need to eat or drink something, we certainly think you should. But we want you to get the best rates possible. And if you do it first thing in the morning before you exercise or eat, you know, all your blood levels and all those things are, you know, blood pressure is much lower and the pulse. So we always like to do it first thing in the morning in the comfort of your home on a date that's most convenient for you. Now,
and it really is that easy, yeah.
It really is that easy. They're probably 15, 20 minutes. And another good point is that there is no charge for a person to go through the underwriting process. In other words, there's no out-of-pocket cost to do an underwriting exam, to put in an application. You know, us as well as the insurance carriers, we pay for all those costs, especially including pulling doctor's records. A lot of your doctor's offices charge $75, $125 just to fax over your records to the carrier so we can do underwriting. But there's nothing out of your pocket as you go through the process until you actually approve the offer that the carrier's provided you, and then you write a check for your first payment. That's when you finally actually go out of pocket.
Got it. Okay.
And if you're writing – I'm sorry, if you're ever writing a check to me or an agent, then you're doing something illegal. So just always keep that in mind too.
Interesting. Okay, so it always goes through. Huh. Okay. Scott, how about long-term disability? I mean, we have a lot of parents different ages, but, you know, kind of think of that for being more for older people. What's your take on that?
That's a good one, because a lot of people confuse long-term disability with long-term care or long-term disability with health insurance. So long-term disability is actually a policy that is going to replace a portion of your income if, God forbid, you become sick or injured and unable to work and earn an income. So it's probably one of the most overlooked insurance coverages that are out there, yet statistically it's used a lot more than a term insurance policy. So, you know, it's so critical. A lot of people have coverage through their employers, but it's usually never enough, and it's not normally portable, which means if you're working at ABC company and they offer you a great long-term disability policy, if you then go to X, Y, and Z company, that coverage is not coming with you. So if it was 10 years later and you're 10 years earlier and not as healthy, and now you go to a company that doesn't offer you any coverage, you need to get supplemental coverage through us, and it's going to be that much more expensive. So whether it's long-term disability or life insurance, the sooner you start, the younger you are, the healthier you are, we want to lock all of that in. And then you can build on top of that as you go. But to be able to lock in the low rates with your good health, it's so critical to do.
So sooner rather than later. I also want to just remind people, if people have questions, they can type them in on the form that we sent you in the email. You just follow that link. It's very easy. You can do it anonymously. And also, I'm thinking about, I'll get Scott's take on this, at the end, doing something we kind of stopped doing because we're not quite sure of background noise, but if Scott wants to try it, I'll try it. I can also unmute everyone at the very end, and it can be like just kind of a group chat if people want to ask questions that way. We can try it. There may be too much background noise because we have a bunch of callers on, but we could try it. We could see Scott. We could go crazy today.
Let's
Scott.
Get okay. wild.
All right, so just know, everyone, I'll do that in a few minutes. So if you do have questions, obviously this is all anonymous. We can't tell who's asking what. We can do it that way, or you feel free to type them in. Okay, so how about financial planners? You know, people, I think, here, should they hire financial planners? Should they do it on their own? What's your take on that?
I think it depends upon the complexity of your personal planning, as well as your confidence. And I truly believe that working with a financial advisor or planner or whatever you want to call them, that their role isn't always just to invest money for you or get you a life insurance policy, but really to hold your hand through the process and manage your emotions. And that can be pretty invaluable sometimes because, you know, when I work with clients, it's obviously not my premium dollars going in, it's theirs. But sometimes they may not think objectively because they're thinking more about costs or emotion rather than, you know, the right rational decisions that they need to make to protect their family or to grow their wealth. So I think there is a true value towards working with a professional who does this on a daily basis. But if you do have the confidence and you have the knowledge and the time and resources to go out and do it on your own, then, you know, go for it. But you know, my firm, we my partner's a CFP. We have an MBA. We have a CPA. So we're always happy to help with any financial planning matter, and we do not charge any fees just to talk, which is kind of unique out there as well.
And Scott, you know, one question I feel like probably comes up a lot, especially with our demographic, is parents, and if this is something they should, you know, ask you offline, or if this is something you want to address now, but parents often want to know how they can kind of channel the generosity of grandparents. So if grandparents want to get involved with financial planning, is there kind of a recipe for them doing that, or is it on an individual basis?
Yeah, it's definitely individualized based upon, because look, you need to make sure the grandparents are set financially with themselves before they can start gifting, you know, assets to the grandkids. And it's always great, instead of buying more Dora the Explorer toys or this and that, that they can actually, you know, put it towards their future. What I have found is that a lot of grandparents go a little old school in their thinking, and their thought process is, let me just continue to save and do what I've been doing for the last 30 plus years. And when I pass, well, that's when, you know, my family and my grandkids will get their share of the money. Sometimes that's fine, but other times there's a much more tax-efficient way to pass on wealth. Not to mention, it's great for grandparents to start gifting now, whether it be to a 529 plan or a life insurance policy for your grandkids, that they can then be alive and see their grandkids benefit from these gifts. You know, to be alive and know that you've paid for college, that's a great feeling that they can have. They need to be educated. They need to be financially stable to do these things. But there's a great power in gifting, and gifting now versus, you know, when you pass away.
Right, right. So let's, in just a minute, I'm going to try this. We'll just say, maybe too loud, but we'll say, and take everybody off mute. Again, Scott and I can't tell who's on. We can't tell people's names. We can't tell phone. It's completely anonymous. So if you have a question, you can kind of just, you know, chime in and say, oh, I have a question. Scott, can you talk about XYZ? So I'll do that in just a minute. I also want to remind people that we're taping this. So, you know, don't feel like you have to kind of listen and take notes. We'll send this all to you, and, you know, we'll send some contact information. And also, before we run out of time and before I take us off mute, I do want to thank Scott Cohen and the Laffey Financial Group. We've been working with, if you called in a little bit late, I'll just recap. We have been working with them for years. We know them personally and professionally. They're great. As Scott mentioned, he really does mean what he says, in that if you have follow-up questions, he welcomes them, and is a parent himself. Because I think that kind of brings an extra level of sensitivity to this whole process.
Heather, that's a great point. Because I have an almost 6-year-old and a three and a half year old little monster boy. So I've gone through all this same process as all the moms out there, and have done all the planning myself for my wife and I and my family. So, you know, I feel I'm not really talking down with people. I'm educating with them, just to tell them I'm always happy to share what I've done for myself and why I've done it. Doesn't mean that my planning is the same type of planning that you should do for yourself, because I don't think that there's any fixed rule or formula to this. And if people tell you that, then run, because it's all about preference. And, and what I mean by that is, if I have Scott Cohen number one with, 38 years old with two kids living on Long Island and, you know, X amount of net worth, I may have the preference of that I need, let's just say, $5 million of life insurance, because I never want my wife or my kids to ever worry or have to, well, my wife to ever have to work, God forbid something happens to me. But you can take Scott Cohen number two with the same two kids, same age, on Long Island, same net worth, same everything, yet his preference is, you know what, let's just do $1 million. It'll get my wife past the next few years, and then, you know what, she's good looking, she's going to remarry, and she'll be fine. So it's all about preference. There's no right or wrong. But doing nothing, well, that's a little scary. Doing something, you'll feel so empowered and so happy that, God forbid, something happens to you or your spouse, that those little peanuts of yours are protected.
Absolutely. It is not kind of one-stop shopping for this by any means. Okay, so let's take everyone off. Let's just see how it goes. People can
I feel like I'm in an 80s techno.
Okay. Did that work?
Yeah, we had a little feedback there.
Okay. So if people are, can people hear me, by the way, or did I just mute everybody?
I hear you.
Did I just mute everybody? Can you hear me? Are there any questions? It looks like everybody's in. Are there any questions, or you can type them in? You should be able to just kind of chime in with any questions on anything.
Hi, I have a question. Can you hear me?
Oh, hi. Yes. Yeah, I can hear you. Hi.
Great. Thank you for setting this up. It's really appreciated. I guess my first question, and I'm not sure, is I have a 60-month-old son right now, and I have a 529 account for him. We live in New York, and I just want, I also have my own life insurance, and I guess I need to add him as a beneficiary. But my other question is, does it make sense to open some type of, I know you mentioned gifting, does it make sense to open some type of trust account or mutual account, savings account that he gets when he reaches a certain age? Because obviously his 529 account is for him when he goes to college.
Sure. No, that's a fantastic question. And actually, you made me think of something very important to share also, so thank you. 529 accounts, for those that don't know, those are savings accounts that are invested in mutual funds. If it's done through New York and you're a resident of New York, New York gives you a tax credit on your tax return for the tax year in which you make the contribution. The money gets invested, and hopefully, as it grows, when you take the money out towards college costs, and that could be room, board, tuition, a laptop, books, you name it, that you don't have to pay taxes on the gains. So it's essentially a tax-free growth vehicle for college expenses in the future. You are taking risk because you're invested in mutual funds, and based upon the level of risk is the amount of return that you can hopefully get over the next, you know, let's say 18 years. There are other things that you can do. You can go to the bank and open up a custodial account, and you can invest in CDs or just put money away or however you want to invest at the bank. Now, here's something important. With a 529 plan, you, as the parent, are the owner and in control of that account at any time. You can change the beneficiary at any time. So if your kid gets a scholarship, you can change the beneficiary to your other kid or your niece or your nephew or someone in your family, or even for yourself if you decide to go back for secondary school. A custodial account is gifts into account for your child, and at the age of majority, depending upon the state that you live in, that money is theirs. So if it's 18 years old and there's $100,000 there and you had planned to put that towards college, yet little Sonny boy learns that legally that's his money, yeah, could have a little issue there. But also it could affect financial aid as you apply, because they will look at how much money in assets and income is in your child's name. So 529, it's in your name. A very small percentage of that will affect financial aid. Whereas a custodial account, I'm okay with it. Just you got to be careful with how much you actually put away.
That's a great question. Thank you very much, caller. Awesome
now,
question.
The second part, you brought up a great point regarding your life insurance, and this is a very common mistake, is listing minors as beneficiaries on these life insurance contracts. Because naturally, that's what you would think you would do. You'd name your spouse as the primary. So God forbid something happens to me, I want my wife to get the money outright on a tax-free basis. So if she has $1 million policy, it's $1 million tax-free into her account, no questions asked. If my wife and I should pass at the same time, because we were lucky to go away on a vacation without the kids, and we listed our children who are minors as beneficiaries, that could be a big issue because the life insurance carriers cannot write a check out to a minor. So it can get held up in court, in which then they'll start checking for wills, which is what we started with. You'd really have want to have a will in place who would list who should be the custodian of this money as you pass. So you never really want to list minors as contingent beneficiaries on these policies. You'd want to either list a custodian or a trustee on behalf of your children, or you want to list your estate as long as you have your will in place. So thank you for reminding
me.
That's
really good question. Yeah.
Very important.
We haven't even covered that. That's an awesome question. Any other questions from people on this call? You could just shout out if you have any questions. You can also type them in.
I'll do a little space filler here because a lot of times people get scared of applying for life insurance because they hear horror stories of how expensive it is. And that's because of agents. We get compensated based upon the amount of premium, meaning the cost of the insurance that you put in year one. So the more that you pay, the more money an insurance agent makes. So you'll find many insurance agents trying to sell you, you probably heard of whole life or permanent insurance policies where they're very expensive. You get less coverage, it costs you more money, but the agent makes out because they make more commissions. I want to stress that there is nothing wrong with term insurance. Term insurance is very plain, simple, and easy. You're renting insurance for, let's call it 10, 15, 20, 25, or up to 30 years. You get a fixed premium for the fixed death benefit. So figure it's $500 a year for $1 million of death benefit. And that's all you need to know. You pay the $500 a year, you're covered for $1 million tax-free death benefit for 20 years, and that's it. So God forbid you pass, your beneficiary will get that. It's inexpensive. You get the most amount of coverage. If you're healthy, you can get it for very cheap, and that will replace income, pay off debt, save money for college, and really protect your family. If you have more wealth and you're comfortable and want permanent coverage that goes out longer than 20 or 30 year, then you should start looking at whole life or permanent coverage if you can afford it. The whole purpose of life insurance is to take that scare away from you so that your family, you know your family's okay. If you're concerned about premium payments each month or year because of the insurance policy is too expensive, then that's not doing anyone good except for the insurance agent.
And guys, I want to remind people you can also type in questions, but anybody have any questions in our remaining time together? Just shout them out. And I'm actually going to check to see if anybody also submitted. Oh, okay, Scott, someone just typed in, hi, I have a new baby and I am wondering at what point I should start saving for college. And that's a good question. I mean, it feels so far away, doesn't it, when you have a new baby?
Yeah.
But that's a really good question.
You know, it is, and here's my answer. You know, the sooner you can start, the better, no matter what the amount. You'd be really surprised whether it's $50 a month or $100 or $1,000. You know, the power of time and compounding of returns can really work out for you for the next 18 years. But I have a metaphor here, but, you know, when you go on an airplane and you're up in the air and the pilot gets on and starts giving you the instructions and telling you, you know, if the plane drops and cabin pressure drops, then the oxygen masks are going to fall from the ceiling. And what do they tell you to do? Heather, there's quiz number two.
Put them on your own mouth before assisting your child.
Very good. Exactly. So my first thought or response to your question is take care of yourself first. Because if you can't financially take care of yourself first and you're so concerned about putting money away for college, then you're never getting there. So watch out for yourself first. Protect, do your protection planning, do your financial planning, and then do something for your college, but don't kill yourself over college. Now, granted, you can always push off retirement, but you really don't want to push back the start date for your kid going to college. So you really should start to do something. But, you know, take care of you, too.
That's another great question. Thank you for that one, too. Okay, last chance, and then we'll bring closure. Any last questions that you want to ask on this live call? Yeah, sure, caller.
I have another question. Sorry, I just asked the question before, so I'm taking up too much time. But my last question, we talked about making sure that you have a guardian for your child or children. Should you also create some type of account that they have access to, or would it make sense to list them as the custodian for if you decide to have like a custodial account? Because I only ask this because if God forbid something was to happen to me and my husband, and like I made my sister-in-law my son's guardian, I would want to make sure that she had the necessary finances to take care
of course.
So I didn't know how.
Yeah, so when you do your planning within your will, you will name not only a guardian, but also a custodian and a trustee and an executor, all who have specific responsibilities. So the guardian is going to take care of your child. The custodian is going to be assigned, you know, you have investment accounts or whatever accounts that you have, 401ks, IRAs, money at the bank, you know, savings accounts, life insurance proceeds. You're going to designate a person or persons inside your will that is in charge of managing the money on behalf of your children. And you can go a step further inside your will to list exactly how you want the money distributed. So in other words, if you just did a custodial account and you know, I mentioned earlier, and you did do a good job of saving for your child, you know, they can have access at age of majority, even if, you know, your aunt or your sister is managing that money until they're age 18. However, if it's in a will, you can dictate how you want that money paid out. So you may say if there's $1 million total between life insurance and all your investments, that your child can get income for health, maintenance, education, whatever it may be, that they may need to tap into this money based upon the custodian's responsibility to distribute that to them. But you may also say, well, then I want them to get a lump sum of money when they graduate college. And then I want another lump sum of money at age 30 or 35 for when they get married. So you can put those instructions inside of your will. There'll be it's like a credit shelter or disclaimer trust inside of your will that will take care of all that for you.
That's another great question. And I don't know if caller, if this is your little one in the background or someone else that I've unmuted, but what's really nice about having a little voice in the background is that it kind of reminds all of us like why we're doing this, what this is all about.
Right.
You know, this is why we're all here in the middle of the day. I think it's awesome, and I think we've had awesome questions. Okay, and I
have
a
question for
the question, but
can I ask a question
and we
for
have
the
one
crew?
Yes, and we have one that's been typed in too, Scott. So I want to get to that.
Oh,
through.
Go ahead.
Yes,
them first.
Okay. So she said, I read, and you know what I'll do? Just while I'm answering this, you know what I'll do? I'll just mute, okay.
Great.
You know, I felt like that baby knew I was talking about that baby and wanted to be like, I'm still here, people. Okay.
Talk about it to my face. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I am in the convo. So this caller just typed in, I read that the funds from the 529 can be used only at certain colleges. It seems very restrictive. Can you please elaborate?
Sure.
That's
you
a good question.
I've
never even heard that.
Yeah, you should be able to utilize for any college within the United States. If you're going overseas, that's going to be an issue. Maybe some specialty colleges, that could be an issue, but it's really any higher education, a U.S. 529 plan should not be restrictive into making payments to those colleges. Now, you can also reimburse. So let's just say my niece decides to go to a college and she just goes and buys textbooks, or let's just say the tuition. It's a $10,000 tuition that semester, because college is going to be ridiculous for all of us, by the way.
Ridiculous.
So they can get the bill, and the 529 plan is, as if the owner requests the distribution, there's no restrictions as to how much money that they can distribute. It's up to the owner to keep the receipts of all these costs in case they get audited. So the 529 plans are going to distribute based upon the owner's request, and whether it goes towards college costs or not is really on the integrity of the owner. But if they ever get audited and they said they took the distributions on a tax-free basis to pay for college tuition to whatever college is out there, and they didn't, in fact, do that, they went and bought a car, if you don't have a receipt and you get audited, well, you're going to have some issues. But otherwise, there shouldn't be any restrictions as to, secondary college within the United States as to, utilizing a 529. So no matter what state plan you invest into, it doesn't matter what state the college is that they go to. So if we invest in the New York state plan because we're New York residents, now, as a New York resident, I can invest in New Jersey or Connecticut or any of those state plans. However, if my son decides to go to University of Michigan, it's not an issue. So those funds, even though it's a New York-based plan, the funds can be used for anywhere in the United States.
That's a good question. I never even thought of that. Awesome questions, everyone. So I want to thank everyone. This has been, and Scott, really, as usual, this has been incredibly interesting and useful. And as usual, you set the right tone for this. And I'm so happy that we had this great group of people and that you were on. And I want to make sure that people know that I'll be sending them a link to this taped call. You're welcome to share it with anyone. And also want to welcome people to really reach out to I want to invite people to reach out to Scott because he means what he says. He will answer follow-up questions. Scott, I'll put this in the email, but will you just also on this call just tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. And if anyone has any tips on how to get a 3.5-year-old boy out of diapers, feel free to email me as well. I think he's going to go to college in diapers. But so my contact number, we're physically located in Syosset on Long Island, New York. However, we travel everywhere to meet with clients. I always like to meet in person, but happy to do a phone call first and foremost to answer questions. And that number is 516-364-7396. Or you can email me. I'm sure it'll be in the follow-up email, but it's skohen@laffeyfinancial.com. That's Laffey with two Fs, i.e. financial.com. But thank you so much, Heather, for setting this up. Thank you, everyone, for taking time out of the day to listen in. It's, there's so many topics and so many things to think about. It's difficult to pinpoint, just a few, but I think we covered some good stuff. But if you have any other questions, concerns, thoughts, things you heard at the water cooler at work, feel free to use my firm as a resource. We're happy to answer questions. And even if we can't help you, we'll point you in the right direction.
And I will send everybody a follow-up email with this all this information if you didn't quite get down the phone number or contact information. Thank you again so much, Scott. Thank you, everyone. Great listeners, great questions. And best of luck on all your parenting journeys, everyone.